everybody. Welcome to the Canine Connection Podcast. Today, we're going to continue talking about clear communication. So the first thing that I think is super important when we start training is having clear criteria. So what do I mean by that? Like a picture, an end picture of what I want. So personally, I have two end pictures. Like I know what I want this exercise to look like when I'm all done, when the dog's fully trained. I know what I want the entire performance to look like in the ring when the dog is quote unquote fully trained. But to get there, I also know what I want each piece to look like as I'm heading in that direction. And I think that's where people really struggle, right? Like their dog does a behavior and they look at the dog and they're like processing in their head, is that right? Is that wrong? And then of course, your marker, your information saying to the dog, that's wrong, that's right, or that's not right, is going to be completely delayed and completely confusing to the dog. Right?
Yes.
And I think what people really struggle with is gray areas, right? They think they're doing the dog a favor by saying, well, it's close, it's almost there, it's kind of right. And they just click or mark and tell the dog that's right. But dogs are not humans. Dogs live in a world of black and white. And that's really hard for people. They think being black and white, having high criteria, being too quote unquote strict is like a negative thing, right? Oh, it's too hard for the dog. You're being a perfectionist. I don't care if my dog doesn't get a perfect score. And that's all great, but black and white is where the dog lives. And you're much kinder if you're like, okay, this is exactly what I want. So when you give me that, I'm going to let you know that that's what I want. And if you don't give me that, I'm not going to tell you that's right. And that's fair, right? I think that's much more clear for the dog.
Definitely. Definitely. I think that this is probably, like you said, one of the most, it's incredibly difficult, especially for people who are new to the sport, have never trained a dog before. So they may not have that picture in their head. They don't know exactly what it should look like. You know, and this is where I think it can get really muddied for the dog, because like you said, if you don't have that exact picture, which really is leading to your specific criteria for, like you said, the end exercise or a behavior, or when we're slicing things down into itty bitty pieces as we're teaching a behavior, then yeah, it can become really muddy and gray for the dog. So this is where I tell people, this is really important to watch things on YouTube, look up, you know, Petra's got tons on YouTube where you can find all this stuff, where you can watch videos of exercises so you can get a clear picture in your head. Because if you don't, then you're going to be marking and, what I like to say, kind of capturing behaviors that may not be what you want. And then later on, you're going to have to change them. And then the dog is like, what the fuck?
Yeah. Like, I mean, people are lucky because you have access to YouTube now, right? Back in the day, because I am not a spring chicken, I didn't have that. So intuitively, I picked a few people that I liked how their dogs worked.
Right.
And that's kind of what I aspire to. And then I watched them like a hawk, right? I watched each behavior in detail and kind of imprinted that vision in my head. And that's what I was striving to achieve. Now, it can go a tiny bit awry when I was expecting my poor breed lab to do a down exactly the same way a border collie did it, because the poor dog couldn't physically do it. And then, you know, my trainer at the time just said, well, that's not realistic. You're going to have to need to modify that. Your poor dog cannot drop like splat like a border collie. So I did, and that was fine. So for sure, YouTube videos, find a person that you like, right? It doesn't have to be a top performer. It could be whatever vision you aspire to in your head. And you should aspire to a vision, even if in your mind you're saying to yourself, well, I'm not going to be a top trainer. It doesn't matter. Just pick the end picture you want. If you have that and you work towards that, you will get there, right? So that's the big end picture. Now the question is, how in the heck are you going to get there when your dog knows nothing, right? When you're at ground zero. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is right? Tough. You know, that's really hard, you know, and I think the biggest and most important piece of advice for that is that you whatever you're currently picking for something you're teaching, you know, a behavior, part of an exercise, is that you take your time and you are working on the itty bitty steps, you know, the pieces, like I like to say, slicing it. We slice it down to small increments that are easy to work on one at a time until you're mastering that, to then add to it until you can end up with the end result, right?
Yeah. So you have to figure out, you have to take pieces of a chain, right? So let's say the chain is the entire run, right? The entire class of whichever sport you do, like the beginning to the end of the entire competition, right? That's the big chain. Now you have to divide it into smaller chains, which would be like the individual exercises. And then you have to take that and break that into even smaller pieces. So if you take a simple exercise, like the recall exercise, it starts with you sitting your dog down in heel position, right? And then the judge says their part, you say their part. Then you have to leave the dog, go to the end of the ring, turn around, face the dog, wait for the judge to tell you to call the dog. The dog comes to front. The dog says finish. You tell your dog to finish, exercise, finish. Okay, that sounds great. Well, you have to break that down even tinier pieces, right? So I teach the finish completely separately. I teach fronts up close separately, and then fronts when the dog's moving quickly separately. I teach bringing my dog to the spot where we start as a piece, sitting the dog as a piece, telling the dog what's coming next as a piece, the judges part, all as individual separate pieces. Leaving the dog is a piece. And then you take each one of those pieces and you break them down into even tinier pieces, right? So the key is, how tiny can you break it down? Because the smaller you make the piece, the easier it's going to be to tell the dog exactly what you want, right? So if you make the piece super teeny tiny, that's a lot easier to say to the dog, this is what I want. And the dog will have a much higher success ratio than if I do a bigger piece. There's way more chance there that the dog's going to have problems, get confused, make mistakes, and then that's going to be kind of demoralizing for the dog.
Right. And with bigger pieces, if they're not sliced down small enough or made small enough, then, like you said, the ratio of error goes up. That's a higher chance of something going wrong. And now you're dealing with multiple variables in the learning process for your dog. So that becomes way too hard for the dog, and because they really can only work on one thing at a time when you're training. And you know, you want your learner to have just one variable at a time to work on, so that can become quickly harder for the dog. If now, like, for example, we're going to work on the actual recall piece where we call the dog, but the dog can't remain in the sit stay. So the dog's making errors getting up. So now we've got two things going on, and that just becomes way too hard for the dog, right? So that's always something that we got to consider too. So slicing it down into smaller bits, like you said, is just going to increase chances of success for your dog.
And that's important, not just when we're teaching, right? Because as we all know, no matter how advanced your dog is, everything requires constant maintenance, and problems constantly crop up. And then you need to go and you need to fix it. Well, the best way to fix it is to pull that piece that the dog's struggling with out and, again, slice it small. So perfect example, Zaina, who's highly experienced, beyond fully trained, been doing this for years. Suddenly, when I give her the signal stand, she's sitting, right? Honestly, I have no idea why. That's who she is.
I love it.
I mean, that's the truth. That's who she is. Sometimes she just, like, something that's happens in her head. And she does this weird thing, right? So today, there were no distractions, nothing in my yard. I did it. She sat. So clearly, who knows what's going on in her head. So how am I going to fix it? Well, I'm not going to do the entire healing pattern into the signal stand, because healing's not what the piece she's having trouble with, right? I don't need to do the down, sit, come, because that's not the piece she's having trouble with. For whatever reason, when I give her the sand signal, she's sitting. So I'm just going to pull that piece out. I'm going to give her, like, heel two steps, give her the sand stand signal, maybe add a verbal, stand. She does that? Yes. Give her a cookie. So I'm just going to isolate that piece, make sure that piece is super solid again, until I can take a few steps, give her the signal stand. She stands every time consistently. Then I'll start adding a little bit of the chain on the back end, or maybe a little bit of the chain on the front end, and kind of build it back into the exercise. The problem people have is when an error like this happens, when something breaks or folds apart or just gets, like, not as crisp as you like, they tend to just do the whole thing or do a big chunk of the behavior. And then it just frustrates you and it frustrates the dog. Whereas if you just pulled that piece out, broke it into something teeny tiny, help the dog be right, fix that, then put it back in, it's going to go much quicker. You're going to have much more success. And both of you are going to be a lot happier.
Right. Yeah. So the importance of just either pulling out little tiny pieces that you need to work on, maintain, and fix, or if you're teaching the dog, then you're just going to start with super small, incremental, tiny pieces, which make it much easier for people, especially who haven't trained dogs, to have a clear vision of what that tiny little piece should look like in their head. And that's going to enable you to be able to mark that piece appropriately, because you have a clear understanding of what exactly that should look like in your head, which will make it that much easier for you when you see it happen. And that's exactly in that moment of what you wanted. That's when you can mark and you're telling the dog that exact piece and that exact time was correct. Okay. So that's, I think, what happens, what we were kind of getting around to really clarifying to people is that if you don't have that clear picture in your head of what that piece should look like, then what happens is the dog does the whatever behavior. And then if you're sitting there thinking about it in your head for even a second after it's happened, because you're not sure if that was right, you've missed your opportunity to mark it if it was correct, or if it wasn't correct and you said yes because you weren't sure, then you're marking something that really at the end of the day you don't even really like because it's not meeting your criteria.
Right. And that ends up being super confusing, right? It's like, right, if I tell someone that works for me, like if I'm like, the workday starts at 9, but they come in at 9:05 and I'm like, oh, hi. And, you know, they get their paycheck anyway. And sometimes they come in at 9:10 and I'm fine with that too. And sometimes they come in at 9 and then one day they come at 9:15 and I'm like, what are you doing? You're late. They're going to be like, what's wrong with you? Like, you never said anything before. You didn't seem right to care, right, if I was, you know, and they're going to be like really unhappy with me. Right. So if I say 9, you have to be there by 9, not 9:01, not 9:02, because it's a slippery slope. Right. And it's not that the dog is trying to take advantage of you. And I honestly don't even think the human is, right. It's just like, if that's okay, maybe a little more is okay. Or, you know, I can come in later. It's no big deal. You never said anything. So with the dog, really conscientious about being very consistent, right? So I know when I want my dog to learn how to do a down, for example, for the drop on recall exercise where they come running in and I give the dog a signal, it has to go down to the ground. I know what I want that to look like. I want my dog to lower their front end first, then their back end. So when I'm first starting that and the dog is in front of me, the dog has to be able to lie down that way in front of me with no speed or with or nothing else going on. So I will only click when the dog does it that way. In order to achieve that, I might need to lure the dog down. That's perfectly fine, right? So I lure the dog's head in a certain way so that their front end lowers, so they're almost like starting a bow, and I'll click that right away because I'm breaking it down into such a tiny piece. If I lure and the dog does like kind of goes to sit first and then down, I'm just not going to click it. It's no big deal. It's just not what I want, right? I'm not going to say, oh, well, you down, so I'll click that. Mm-mm, that's not what I want, right? No big deal. It's not the dog's fault. Dog has no idea. So I'll just modify my luring so the dog's head goes down first. It starts to bow. The second it starts to do the behavior I want, I click yes and feed. I'm not waiting until the dog goes all the way down to the ground, right? I'm just clicking the very first piece of that down, and then I'll build on that as we go along. But the important part there is click the tiny piece when the dog is right. Don't click when the dog isn't giving you what you want. It's fine. The dog will survive. You're not doing anything terrible. You're not yelling at the dog. You're not saying, ah, what are you doing? You just do it over, right? And very quickly, the dog goes, oh, you want me to put my head down first? And then I'm like, perfect. Now I can build on that, right? So as long as you have that clear picture and break it into pieces, then you have the ability to, in your head, say, okay, this is correct. Anything else is not, right? And I like to kind of review that picture in my head every time before I start training, right? I don't want to just start training and go, oh, wait, how did I want that to be? Because now my poor dog's sitting there like, dude, what do you want? Make up your mind, right? And I think that's really important. I'll tell students, write lists, write notes, whatever, and they do, and then they always forget to read it before they train. And I'm like, okay, that's not going to help you as much as if you actually, and to this day, I write notes, and I will look at them before I train so that I have a clear picture in my head. Okay, this is what I'm working on. This is what I'm trying to achieve. This is how I'm going to break it down.
Yeah.
And this is right and this is wrong. And so then when I train, my training's super efficient and effective because everything's clear in my head. And then right. all I need to do is execute what I envisioned, right?
Right.
So doing that is, I think, super helpful. If people just, people are so interesting. Like, they can't wait to actually physically train the dog.
Yeah. It's
and
true.
I get that, but if you took that extra 5 minutes, 10 minutes, whatever, without the dog, then that time with the dog is way more fun, way more rewarding, way more effective than not taking that time because you just can't wait to do the thing with the dog.
Right.
And then you end up with muddy training. It's unclear. The dog gets frustrated.
Yeah.
You get frustrated.
Yeah. Yeah. And that, you know, there's something to say about that too with, you know, I think, like you said, like everyone can't wait to just physically train the dog. Everyone can't wait to get to the end product of whatever they're trying to train, whether it's the actual one exercise or the one behavior or the entire freaking class. Like, they're in a little bit of a rush, which you just need to be really careful with. You know, this is where there's frustration that will pop up in training sessions with your dog. If you don't want to rush things and you don't want to be so quick to get to the end result when you're going to have dogs that need it to be broken down even more, even though you went into your training session with, okay, today I'm going to work on the, you know, like we talked about, like, let's say we're going to teach a dog a pivot, right? And we're going to work on that. I want to teach my dog the pivot to whatever glove. Okay. And we rush the process instead of breaking it down probably a little bit more than we should be breaking it down. And then the dog isn't doing X, Y, and Z steps that you had in your head. And you get frustrated. The dog is getting frustrated. And in that moment, you need to be able to be honest about your dog training and say, I need to break it down even more for this dog. I need to break it down even more for this dog, even if they're not even getting that, like to the point where you can get the dog to do the behavior correctly, even if it is sliced so super thin, that then you can actually mark and reward that tiny piece, right? So frustration can be built in very easily if you're just not conscientiously being aware in your training session that the dog is either not getting it at the pace you expected it to be. That's a thing.
And yeah, frustration is ultimately the result of expectation, right? And that's completely on us. Like, if I'm frustrated, it's because I have an expectation and my dog's not meeting it. That's not the dog's fault.
Right.
That's my fault. So if I'm feeling frustrated, the first thing I do is I just stop. I just put my dog down and I stop. Because I'm like, okay, I'm frustrated because it's not going the way I expect it. Okay, fine. Well, that means I need to change something, right? It's on me to adjust that expectation. It's not up to the dog. Right. The dog's trying to figure out what I want. I thought he would understand the way I'm explaining it. Clearly, the dog's not. I need to explain it differently. So rather than continuing on, because I see this all the time, it's this weird phenomenon. And trust me, I feel it myself and I've done it.
Yeah.
Where, like, I'm frustrated and I'm like, would you just figure it out? And you just keep doing the same. It's like banging your head against the wall. You just keep doing the same thing over and over and over. Like, and you're like getting more and more frustrated. Like, what is wrong with this stupid dog? It's not figuring it out. Right. And the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over, expecting a different result. Right. That's one of my favorite quotes. So I have this thing that when I start to get frustrated and feel this urge to keep going, I start yelling in my head, insanity, insanity. And then I'm like, that's my cue to myself to just abort, like stop.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Figure it out. Like, and if I can't figure out why it's not working right then and there, I just abort the whole thing and do something else. Right. And then I spend time thinking about it for as long as I need to till I come up with a solution. And if I still can't, then I connect with someone to get some ideas to figure out how to do it differently. But yeah, you don't want to just keep going. It's like it's a human phenomenon. I don't know why.
I don't know why either, but it is. And it happens to all of us, like you say.
So crazy. And it's like, yeah, or if I'm working with a student or my training partner, I'll just be like, and I see it happening, I just start going, insanity, insanity, like, hello. And then they're like, oh, yeah, we have to do something different.
Something right? different, right?
Yeah. So definitely, like you said, one of the things that's a surefire way to fix almost all things is just break it down into a smaller piece. And you also want to look at your timing, because timing is so important for dogs. Like in a human, if I'm learning agility and I run and I do a maneuver that's not correct and I run a little more and then I stop, my instructor could say to me, that piece in the middle, you didn't do that right. Because humans have the ability to look back and look forward. So I can go, oh, you mean when I did that spinny thing? He can go, yeah, that piece, here's why it wasn't right, and here's what you can do to fix it. You cannot do that with a dog. If your dog has a problem, either does the middle piece correctly or incorrectly, and then you let them do a little bit more and then give them the information, they are not going to connect it to the piece that happened in the middle. That's super important to understand, right? People are always giving the dog, not always, very often giving the dog information at the incorrect moment in time. Dogs live in this moment, right here and right now. So if my dog makes a mistake or does something right and I miss that moment in time, I'm like, whoops, my bad. I just throw that out the window. Like, I don't try to salvage it. I'm not like, oh, let me say yes or no now. I'm like, yep, I mucked up. My bad. I totally missed it. Right. Because once the moment's passed, it's passed. So people do that with correct behaviors. Like, the dog does it correctly and they hesitate. And then the dog continues on in the chain. And then they go, yes. And I'm like, that's okay, but you didn't emphasize what you wanted to. So if my dog does a gorgeous down on the drop on recall and I say nothing and then I call the dog to front and then I tell the dog it was brilliant, the dog is going to have the strongest association to the front.
Right.
Because that's what just happened in that moment in time. If my dog gives me a beautiful drop, I immediately go, yes, and I start freaking out. That was so good. Oh, my God. Now the dog's going to pair the information with the drop, which is the piece I wanted to emphasize, versus something later in the chain. Or they give the dog like a sit. The dog sits really quickly and perfectly, and then they wait. And they wait because maybe they're processing in their head. And then they go, yes. Well, from the dog's perspective, you highlighted duration. You highlighted the fact that the dog sat still for 3 seconds. The dog is not going to connect it to the fact that it sat quickly the second you gave it the signal because you missed that window period, right? So I give my dog a sit signal. My dog responds instantly, slams their butt to the ground. I go, yes. My dog's going to go, oh, that's the piece she liked. As soon as she gives the signal, I slam my butt down and you're going to get more of that.
Yeah. And that goes, you know, the timing of your marker is critical because, like you said, the dogs live in the moment. So if your timing is a second or two off, then you're really not, like you said, you're not indicating to the dog that that exact thing that you did at that exact time I marked was what I wanted. So I think people, for some reason, they want to wait till like the end of like whatever they're doing, right? Like, so a big one for me, a big example is when we're working pace changes with the dogs, you know, and I'm like, you want to mark literally in the moment of you doing the fast, like, don't worry about like, you know, just mark it. And that's really hard for people to do because they want to like stop. And then the dog, of course, wants to sit. And then they go, yes. And I'm like, well, what did you just mark? The sit. So for some reason, like they can't, like it's hard for them to do it like in the exact moment. Even I think with the dog, I think a lot of it too is when the dogs are in motion. Marking the dogs when they're in actual motion is really hard for people. They want to like mark. It's easier for people for some reason, I think, to mark in static, like stationary stuff. It's just easier for people to do that. I think their brains, like it is such a fast response time you need to have, which pairs with making sure you have such clear criteria, which, you know, is relatively easier for people who have trained more dogs, like we talked about. So that's where people get stuck. A lot of my students who are just beginning this, teaching the sport, they pause because they're not sure if they should mark that. They're not sure if that's exactly what they should be rewarding, you know, to the dog. And I do tell people, I'd rather have you do something in the moment than nothing, you know, because when you miss those opportunities to tell the dogs that they're correct in that moment, then you know, that's where we waste time and the dogs then don't understand why they're being, or what they're being told that they did right or wrong.
Yeah. I think part of it is processing, right? Because there's so much information, especially if someone's newer, but even more experienced people have a lot of trouble with it. And I think part of it is what you mentioned earlier, which is this overwhelming desire to do the whole thing, right? To be able to do the entire chain. And there's also in our sport, I don't know about in other sports, but in our sport, there's a big thing about, oh, well, if you mark this piece of the chain, you're going to create behaviors you don't want.
Oh, yeah, right? Yeah.
So, for example, if we're doing scent articles and the dog finds the correct article and I say, yes, my dog is allowed to drop the article and come running into me. So people are afraid that if you do that, the dog's going to find the right article, drop it, and run into you, which is not true. And I'm pretty sure we touched upon this in the last episode. If you use your markers correctly and consistently, that is not an issue, right? And I also think it's the way it's taught. And a lot of instructors teach like full chains. I know it's super common in rally that you go to a class and all they do is set up courses.
Oh, yeah.
And everybody goes and does the full rally course every time. And if there are pieces in the middle that are brilliant, they don't mark it. If there are pieces in the middle that are a mess, they don't address it. So the dog really never learns, the pieces don't ever improve because all you're doing is you're doing the sign. Or if they work on an individual sign in training, they're working on the full sign. they don't break the pieces of that sign into teeny tiny pieces, right? So it's also kind of in the culture a lot, depending on where you're training. Like even in field training, most people would do a setup. Oh, and I had an instructor nose work that did this too. Like every training session or every iteration we did was a different concept. And so the dogs never really learned to master one concept because they're like, do this. Now we're off to that. Now we're off to that. You know, and I was super lucky because I had a very non-traditional field trainer, and he used to set things up to teach like a concept. So we do the same concept three times, and that really gave the dogs a chance to learn that individual concept, right? Versus always doing like something different. Basically, always in my, the way I viewed it, you were always testing the dog and you weren't really teaching the dog. So it's always that trying to do the whole thing, you know, versus just breaking down the individual pieces. And I know in my classes, I'm like constantly preaching, you know, about the pieces, the pieces, the pieces, the pieces. And yeah. I feel like once people understand that, and once they try it and see how well it works, then they get pretty good at it.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. So, yeah. Yeah. And you know, the pieces, like, cause I'm the same way, preaching about breaking it down into small pieces. And you know, and then even if your dog, you know, you tell me, well, my dog's still stuck, then you need to break it down even more. You know, that's our job. Like we talked about, it's on us as the trainers to explain it to the dog in a way that they understand in a small bite size piece that they can grasp and understand. And, you know, when we're talking about marking, you know, I think that's what happens when people are marking stuff that really isn't meeting criteria because they're doing too big of chunks. You know, they're trying to race to get to the end, like we talked about. And so they rush and they have a little bit of a, you know, good enough attitude, which down the road, I tell a lot of my students is, you know, if it's not clear and concise criteria that you're marking, then it's only going to bite you in the butt later on. Because like with everything else, if you don't build a solid foundation on those little tiny pieces, they are going to, you know, cause bigger things down the road to break.
And it's a lot easier down the road to fix things when your dog's been taught that way, right? Because it's only like a little piece of the whole thing that's confusing. And so you just need to fix that one little piece and the dog understands like, oh, we're breaking things down. Oh, I get it. And they pick it up very quickly. If there's a big chunk that's starting to break down, then it's a lot harder to remediate that later on. And trust me, no matter how good of a trainer you are, no matter how talented your dog is, throughout their career, things fall apart. That's just normal. Like that is going to happen. I promise you, it's going to happen. Like I always say, and people, when I tell people this and they don't have a championship on their dog, they like look at me like I'm crazy. But I always say it's way easier to get a championship than it is to maintain, once a dog's at that level, to maintain that over time. Way harder. And people are always like, but somebody said this in class like a few months ago. They're like, she knows this. Why is she doing this wrong? And, you know, all the more experienced people were like, because that's always what happens. And the person's like, but why? I've taught her everything. Right. And we're just like, that's just the way it is.
Yeah. So
just accept it. Deal with it. It ain't going to change. It is what it is, right?
Yeah.
Like everything, this falls apart, that falls apart. Different dogs have problems with different issues. Like it's constant work.
Yeah.
But if you have that foundation and if you've, you know, done those little pieces, you're in way better shape. Now, having said all that, I have more than once taught something kind of like in like where later it bit me, where I maybe early on because I just didn't know, maybe because I thought this was the best option for this dog, and later on I come to realize like, maybe this wasn't the best option because like this isn't working out. So it is possible to retrain something, especially if you retrain it very thoroughly by breaking it into tiny little pieces. So like for example, Zeal, I taught him how to heal the way I had been taught. So I taught him focal point, where to look, right? And I taught him engagement to stay engaged with me and not worry about the environment. So I think it was his first national, and I looked at the point breakdowns and I'm like, wow, like I'm losing a lot of points in healing. Like, and I think my dog's healing really well. Clearly the judges don't. So what's going on? So I took a bunch of dogs that I knew were really good healers and got good healing scores, and I watched videos of them like in detail, and I realized their position relative, like, so where the dog's shoulders in relation to the handler's hip was way tighter than mine. So I said, well, I need to now also teach Zeal position. I need to get him further back. So now at this point, he was a quote unquote fully trained dog. He quote unquote knew how to heal. Now, anyone that's ever tried to teach a dog how to heal, it is an incredibly complex behavior. It is the hardest behavior to teach in competition obedience, right?
Correct.
So basically, I had to retrain his healing from the ground up, right? So now, on the one hand, in my head, I'm like, oh gosh, this is going to be a massive project. And then I was like, well, no, it's not. I only need to reteach a piece of it. So I took this fully trained dog and I started with literally half a step, probably less, just like a weight shift, right? And I was like, if I shift my weight, no matter what I do, keep this part of your body in line with this part of my body without going too deep in the weeds, right? And I broke it down literally quarter of a step, half a step, one step, one and a half steps, two steps, at a slow pace. So literally I broke it down that tiny, then I went to slow pace and so on. And it only took me a couple months, which I thought was pretty darn fast for such a complex behavior, especially one where he had already in his mind was like, well, I'm supposed to be here. And now I'm saying, no, 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 you're supposed to be there. And I believe that the reason he learned it that quickly was because I sliced it into teeny, teeny, tiny pieces. He was correct. He had a really high rate of being successful. So he didn't get like bummed out or frustrated. He was a really sensitive dog, could not abide being wrong. So I just had to make him right, make him right, make him right.
Yeah.
And he relearned it. His healing was way tighter and he was able to maintain that. Yeah, sometimes he needed a reminder, but it really wasn't anywhere close to as hard as I had envisioned it. And again, like an old wives tale, in obedience is if your dog learns it wrong, when you retrain it, anytime they're under pressure, they're going to revert back to the original behavior. And I did believe that for a long time until I did this with Zeal. And I said, you know what? If you retrain it really well,
right,
then they're not going to revert back to the other behavior.
Yeah. And I think that is also true because you have sliced it down so thin and incrementally worked on it in such small parts that his, like you said, his success rate was super, super high, which means that you were marking a lot for correctness and reinforcing a lot. So reinforcement rate goes up, which means that they have a really high reinforcement history, which will eventually outweigh whatever history is in the past.
Yeah.
Right.
And I think another thing that I think is important when we're training is to assess your progress constantly, like within the session, session to session, week by week, month by month. So you have to be keeping track somehow.
Right.
Because people will get stuck in two directions. One is they go too fast, right? And then things start to degrade. The error rate gets high. Things get messy. The other group of people I see a fair amount is they spend so much time on little pieces that they just, they get stuck there, like they never progress. And the dog starts to think, well, I guess this is the end behavior. And then when you try to push it a little, the dog kind of gets stuck where it's at, because it's like, but you've reinforced this 1,000 times.
Right.
So this must be what you want. I see that with hold a lot. Like people get the initial behavior of the dog putting their mouth on it. But then when they're trying, they reward that so many times over so many sessions that the dog's like, close mouth over, open mouth, close mouth over, open mouth.
They get stuck on a hold for like 2 seconds forever.
Forever. And then they're like, well, I can't get duration.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, so there is a fine line, right, between not like going too fast and going too slow.
Right.
And I think the only way you're going to keep track of that is if you're writing it down, right?
Yeah.
If I'm working on something for 2 weeks tops and I'm seeing no change in behavior, I need to reevaluate what I'm doing and change something, right? Like I don't want to be working on something for 3 months and it's still not getting better. Well, what have I been doing for 3 months? Inadvertently reinforcing the incorrect behavior.
Yeah. And I see that a lot, you know, when people come to me with X, Y, or Z problems and, you know, I'll say to them, well, how, you know, what have you been doing? And they tell me what they've been doing and they're like, but you know, I just feel like it's not working. And so this is what I've just been doing for the last like year. I'm like, a year? I'm like, dude, that's a long time. You've been really, you know, inadvertently reinforcing this behavior. So you're right. Like I always look back. It's kind of a conscientious thing, thought process in my head all the time, you know, like every time I do a training session, whether or not I'm working on a little piece or whatever, you're right. Like I want to see progress with whatever rate I want to see it. So obviously something that's brand new is going to take a little longer. But if I'm at like you said, maybe a 2 week mark and I'm like, this isn't meeting the criteria that I want in my head, then you do have to pull up and you have to either break out piece again and redo it. You know, you have to do something. Don't keep going. And don't, like you said, don't get stuck in the same thing. Like you don't want to stay there forever because you do want progress. Because I tell people, I'm like, so you, if you get this behavior and you've mastered it and it's solid, push through. Like you need to go to the next step. You need to go to make it, you know, extend the chain of whatever you're working on, because you can always go back and pull that piece out or go back to where the dog was last right and fix it from there.
Yeah, it's forward, backward, forward, backward, forward, backward, right? Like I'm always teetering on the edge, right? So my dog's doing it correctly, doing this piece. So let's stick with hold, right? So my dog's consistently putting its mouth on it. as soon as it's doing that, I immediately wait for 2 seconds.
Yeah.
Right? Like I'm not waiting for 5 or 10, but I'm going right from 1 second to 2 to 3 to 4. And then if my dog just can't do 4, all right, maybe I'll mark a couple of 1s or 2s, but then just a few. So now the dog had some success. So now I'm like, all right, let's try for 4 again.
Yeah.
Like I'm constantly like pushing the edge, but I'm pushing the edge a tiny bit.
Right.
Again, I think that's where the people just go for way too much. Like they're pushing the edge for a big leap. So my dog puts his mouth on it. Now I want a 5 second hold, which is a long time. 1 Mississippi, 2, that's a long time. And so then the dog keeps failing. And then they're like, oh, well, and then they go back to 1 second, 1 second, 1 second, 1 second. That's where you get stuck, right?
Yeah.
So if you go from 1 to 2, from 2 to 3, from 3 to 4, okay, maybe I get stuck at 4, go back a couple reps, move it up again. That's where you're going to be able to see progress, right?
Right.
And
right.
Your progress will, even though it's counterintuitive, you are going to make way faster progress than if you don't. Because quite frankly, I never get stuck on duration. Like my dogs, I don't get stuck there and go, well, I'm stuck. Because I am doing such little pieces and I'm pushing back a little bit, pushing forward back a little bit, that I get through duration relatively quickly.
Right.
So it always goes back to the same thing. Break it into tiny little pieces and, you know, mark the piece you want and then just have some flexibility. Like, don't be afraid to push forward. Right. And don't get so caught up in I need to get to the end that you never go back when the moment calls for it.
Right.
And you really need to keep track. Like you should be keeping notes. Like it's not going to take you that long, right? Just to say like, okay, today I started this, tomorrow I'm there, the next day I'm there. Because if you, this way you'll catch yourself when you're getting into a little bit of trouble and you'll be able to remedy it really quickly instead of just kind of wandering aimlessly for a sustained period of time. And now it's a much bigger hole.
Right.
To dig out of.
Yeah. You know? So date your notes. Yes. So that you're not like, oh shit.
Date your notes. Like when I ask somebody, how long have you been working on this? A lot of times, sometimes they can't even tell me. Well, if you can't tell me, that's a problem.
Right.
It means you are not aware. Right. Like I can tell you how long I've been working on something and how many different things I've tried and how long I've tried each thing for.
Right.
Like if I'm trying to teach my dog something and I'm using a certain technique, I'm not going to give up on it in a week. I'll try it maybe 2-3 weeks as long as I'm seeing some progress. But if I'm not seeing any progress, then I'm going to try something else. And again, even within that, it's a balance because some people try something, it doesn't work in 2 or 3 days. They try something else, doesn't work in 2 or 3 days. And that's not helpful either.
Right.
Right. You have to kind of stick to something for a set amount of time, give it the good old college try,
see
if it's going to work. And if it does, great, keep going. If not, throw it out, try something different.
Different. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, just going back to talking about timing, which is, you know, to me, I tell everybody, like, it's the timing of your mark. Like, it's not just revisiting the food thing, because I know people get stuck on the food, the reinforcer. It's not the reinforcer that's telling the dog that they're correct. It's the actual mark, which is dependent on the exact timing of it, to let your dog know exactly in that second that that behavior was correct. You know, and like we talked about, the clear criteria is essential. And if you're not sure about what your criteria is, then follow somebody on YouTube. Or, you know, when I was a novice, I literally would show up at every trial at freaking 8 o'clock in the morning. Like, people are like, why are you here so early? Oh, I like to watch. Literally, because I'm a visual learner. So the more I watched, the more I learned, you know, and watching really, really good handlers is how I learned the picture I wanted for myself, for my dogs, which made it much easier for me to have that tiny picture in my head. And I could mark it quickly because I knew that's what I wanted.
Yeah, that picture is super important. Like, I cannot overemphasize that. And, you know, maybe over time that picture changes a little bit. But if you don't have a clear picture in your head when you start your training session, then it's not going to be an optimal training session,
right?
For you or for the dog. So if you just take that time to put that picture in your head, it's just going to be so much more beneficial for you and for your dog. You'll both be happier. You'll both have a lot more fun and your training will just go a lot more smoothly and the dog learns more quickly that way.
Yeah, absolutely.
Good. So that was a lot. As usual, we will look at some of the things we talked about. We'll take some little video clips for you guys to so you can actually see what it looks like. I know, I'm like we just said, I know I'm a visual learner, so I'll listen to podcasts and they'll talk and I'm like, oh, I kind of see where this concept's going. But then it would be so much more helpful for me if I could actually see them doing it, right? Yeah. So we'll take some clips for you guys and we'll add those to our YouTube channel. And I think that's a good session for today, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. That was a great session. That's an important, very important session.
All right. Yeah. So thanks, everybody, for listening. And we'll see you at the next episode. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye. Sounds good.